You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy?
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial, and with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown, and through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at marines.com.
Hello and welcome to the Nat Coombs Show. Happy New Year, everybody. I am Mike, back in the hot seat for our review show. You see, some things change, but some things thankfully stay the same. And we have got a lot to get into over the next 60 minutes. So let's get straight down to business and welcome the brilliant Mike Carson. Hi, Mike. Good to see you. How is 2022 treating you so far?
Is it 2022? There's this great Scandinavian word called somjul, which basically means as or like Christmas. And it refers to that week between Christmas and New Year, which this year has extended, obviously, because Christmas, you know, being on a Saturday and all, where you just don't know what day it is.
What is going on?
I mean, nine times a day, I'm walking down the street going, Do I take my son to school tomorrow? No. It's 2 days from now. You know, that kind of thing. Do I have the pod with Matt today? Oh yeah. So it's a good thing I'm here. I've been sitting here for 12 hours waiting.
Since the last show, you've just been sitting waiting, hoping Zoom would fire up. Well, it is good to see you. We've got a ton to get into. I'm going to fire a whole lot of questions at you.
Whole lot of questions. Forget it. I'm out of here.
Oh, that's no. Oh, Mike, come on. Oh, the shirt's coming off. The shirt's coming off. He's throwing the shirt into the crowd of one, Rufus. You're going to take the undershirt off as well, because that's what Antonio did.
Peace out.
I thought you looked quite, actually, as we were getting ready to record, I thought you looked, Mike, for the benefit of our pod listeners, we'll push that clip out on our social channels at the NC Show so you can see the video, see it in all its full glory. Mike ripped off his shirt, Antonio Brown start. Let's start there, because I want to talk about Big Ben's final win at Heinz, it seems, last night. But seeing as you mentioned Brown, let's go there first of all.
I wasn't referring to anybody in particular.
Sure you weren't. We were just saying before we started recording the show, actually, the really interesting language coming out from the Bucks or around the situation, that after Arians' post-game was unequivocal that he's no longer a Buck, turns out he is still a Buck, Mike.
Yeah, the Bruce Arians spoke and just said he's no longer a Buck, and the team, whoa, cool your jets there. I suspect that it's mostly they're talking to the league about what's the least damaging way to release him,
right?
Primarily contractually. There might be a slight concern that someone would pick him up and he'd come back to haunt them. But
do you reckon anyone would? That's a because you.
Well, I was thinking that was it, because the big thing with Antonio Brown. And we know he's a troubled individual, with lots of problems, and you know, there's a pattern to the troubles he's had off the field, which is mostly that he basically charms people, and for various things, and they do stuff, and then he doesn't pay them, or he harasses them, you know, in multiple ways, and then doesn't want to face the responsibility, and it's a terrible thing. But in the NFL, they'll forgive that. Talent gets you forgiven any number of times.
Right.
They'll give you more chances. But when it happens on the field, they're less forgiving. It's a very strange kind of paradox, but it's true.
Is it because it's in full public glare, and so they can't in any credible way?
Anything that happens on camera is worse than what doesn't. You know, you look at Kareem Hunt's, but the other thing is there's a certain responsibility to the team ethos that you're not supposed to break. That's beyond the pale. You can do whatever you want off the field. And you know, given that video that the taxi driver, the car driver put up, you know, with Antonio in the back seat when he picked him up from the stadium after the state police refused to give him an escort to the airport and took him into the city. I don't have a whole lot of faith in a good week for Antonio coming up. Although he did release a rap record, and cynics among us might suggest he was trying to get attention for that.
Well, there is a possibility. Should have left the stadium in his hot air balloon. I wonder where that is these days.
That would be gorgeous.
It would be gorgeous.
Make a whole movie out of that.
I think he's just moving, just travel everywhere by hot air balloon. I mean, we joke about it, and a lot of people have, of course, and it's easy because it was shocking. You know, I was on air at the time, and we couldn't believe what we were seeing and trying to make sense of it. And was this pre-game? Well, was it before halftime? What was going on?
Yeah, there's a bunch of things coming out, as sort of mitigations, I guess. One is that he had an argument with Tom Brady because Brady wasn't going to him enough and was going to, I think it was like your boy Gronk or something like that.
It's really interesting you say that, Mike, because when it started to unfurl, as I said, we're trying to piece it together, and you hop on Twitter and see what Shefty and people are saying, and can you piece all the clues together? That was one of the first things I did. I thought, is he not been thrown at? How many looks has he had in this game? And actually didn't look, I can't remember, but it certainly wasn't as if Brady hadn't targeted him at all. So I thought I kind of dismissed that, but that's interesting. Okay. Yeah.
And plus, you know, Brady's been his, you know, biggest supporter,
right?
You know, to the point of having him living in his house in two different places.
Sure.
And then the other interesting one was that, some people were saying, oh, his ankle, he had said he couldn't go back in because his ankle hurt, but there was mitigating against that is Mike Evans was there, you know, obviously arguing with him on the sideline to go in. And then when he didn't go in, obviously he was doing jumping jacks and skipping across the field and that kind of stuff. So it didn't look like his ankle was bothering him horribly, you know? So yeah, I think it's a good thing to move on from Tampa's point of view. Since we're talking about Ben in just a second, you know, that was an amazingly great combination, Ben to Antonio Brown. People don't realize exactly how good Antonio Brown was for those 9 years in Pittsburgh until they finally got sick of his antics. And if you remember back to that all revolved primarily around his calling out Juju when Juju was named the team MVP that season. But yeah. Brown had just a string of great years. Not the best year in the league, you know, not the flashiest year in the league, but every single year. And he still holds a record, if you want to call it a record, but, you know, five or more catches, 36 consecutive games or something like that, which is a sign of consistency. He's an amazingly good receiver, which is why he keeps getting, he does everything. He does the hard work, you know, he takes hits and that kind of stuff. So, yeah, you know, the talent, he's 33 now, I guess. And, you know, he could still come back if he gets his life, together. But, I think that is a long shot.
It is. And it's sad. And it's a great point. He's a hell of a player. And it's easy to forget that with all the antics. And also, I guess, what occurred to me with all this, Mike, is, you know, it's easy to throw shots and, you know, I've thrown a couple of cheap ones already on the show, but clearly something is not right there. And when you see a meltdown maybe is going too far with it. But when you see a behavior like this, part of you thinks, well, actually, and I know that you're right, there are lots and lots of stories that have come out around him that are indefensible in terms of his behavior, are certainly unpalatable. But this is somebody, a terrific athlete who is in the glare of the public eye under pressure and is behaving like this. I just hope, first things first, he can try and get right, because it's different from, I don't know, a situation like Josh Gordon, right? But not 1,000 miles away from that either, that you just want the individual to be okay first and everything else to follow. And
yeah, I think that's reasonable. Gordon's a different set of problems and a deeper one, I think. But
as far as we know,
I don't know how you do it.
Yeah. Where does this leave the Bucks? Because they're banged up anyway. And as you say, Brady was a key supporter in and really the key protagonist in bringing him in, returning him and bringing him back into the NFL and reestablishing him as a top receiver, given the injuries they've got to Godwin most notably, but the ground game has been struggling since Fournette went down as well. Where does this leave the Bucks offense now, Antonio Brown, going forward?
Well, Cyril Grayson, Cyril from Eton and Oxford. yeah, it was interesting to see Brady go to him. And I think he had 8 catches on the game, but that last pass was a brute. Did you see it wasn't a pump fake. Brady did a whole shoulder fake. You know, he went like that.
Yeah.
And that guy, and Grayson didn't even play college football. He was a runner at LSU. Right. The problem is Brady and Rodgers, you can almost make an equivalence there. It's a trust factor.
Yeah.
They're such perfectionists or have such faith in their own ability to throw perfect passes. They don't want to throw to people who can't catch them or who don't do what they're supposed to do, aren't where they're supposed to be. Mm. And to a raw kind of receiver like Grayson, that was a huge step forward, I think, because maybe he can go that way. Mike Evans is healthy right now. You know, if I'm the Bucks, what are you at this point? It's an interesting thing with the playoffs this year, too, because with only one bye, there's actually more reason to rest players if you have your position more or less locked up. Now, the Bucs could fight for the top seed overall, but that would require Green Bay to lose as well as them to win. Mm. So,
and Green Bay said they're playing their starters. They've come out this week.
They said it, but we'll see what happens. You know, nobody's going to say we're going to tank this game.
Sure.
But, you know, if I'm the Bucks, I would rather stay in the 2 seed with a healthy Mike Evans than get the 1 seed and lose Mike Evans to an injury, just as an example. And they need him a lot, given how thin that receiving core is. Same with Gronk. I'd want to rest Gronk, he's 32, but he's like 48 in terms of playing age.
Hey, you're forgetting, so, yeah. Mike, you're forgetting Scotty Miller. Maybe Scotty can be the go-to guy.
Yeah, well, I thought he would step in, but Brady doesn't seem to, you know, look for him, though. And maybe it's because the offense is a bit different and Scotty's skill set isn't quite the fit they're looking at. I wouldn't be surprised if they started doing that more. More of a worry for the Bucs is the run defense doesn't seem to be as good as it was for most of the season. And they're going to have to put that back together. So, I mean, I think week 18 is going to be a very difficult one to pick because of that. If I were a team with nursing injuries or having COVID guys or whatever, I would prefer to take this sort of half rest of a week before going into the playoffs. Right. And I always used to argue in week 18 that, you know, teams should not rest players if they were going into a bye position or they should fight for a bye position because it was such a huge advantage to get that first week off and then play. But with only one bye, it's pretty much, at least in the NFC, it's pretty much set for the Packers. Mm.
Yeah, it is. Well, we'll talk about the who can run the Packers close in the playoff race in a bit. Let's go to Monday Night Football, seeing as we've trailed it a couple of times. And Big Ben in his post-game interview, Mike, said the game played out like much of his career, not always pretty, but we found a way, which I thought was a pretty appropriate reflection on how the Steelers won that game and how he performed. They gave him the chance to air it out, of course. I mean, he was over 40 attempts, wasn't he?
I think he had the fewest number of yards for a quarterback with over 25 completions in history. He only had 123 yards passing. I mean, I would not want to be one of Ben's receivers for the last couple of years because basically what you do is you take one step, you slant across the middle of the field. He throws you the ball 3 yards from the line of scrimmage and then somebody smashes you from behind and repeat, you know, just shower, rinse and repeat over and over again. I mean, to me, the craziest thing is that the Steelers have evolved into this system where Ben's ability to get rid of the ball. And over previous years, and which is why he's where he is now, over previous years, his ability to take hits and still complete passes because he's so big and strong. You know, he absorbed a lot of punishment, probably more than any quarterback short of David Carr, you know, without getting sacked because he just didn't go down. And I think one of the problems Pittsburgh will be facing now is their inability to ever develop a successor to Ben. Now that's partly because they would never let the guy play until it was an emergency and they had to. But
how much of that, I was thinking about this, the injury that Ben had a couple of years back, because there's talk of his retirement has been flying around for a number of years, right?
And, he only played two or three games that season.
Yeah. And I wonder if that had been a complete season played out, maybe quite similar to the way this year has played out. You know, they're in playoff contention down to the wire, whether he might have hung him up then, and it might have actually made the succession plan a little bit more straightforward.
Yeah, I mean, at some point, and now you don't know what they're going to do for next year, but obviously that's a landing place for a quarterback, a veteran quarterback, because I doubt they'll want to do the thing the Patriots have done this year and, you know, bring in a rookie and manage to get into the playoffs. Cause you look at what all the other rookies, higher drafted rookies have done. And it's not, but you know, they're not a bad team. So if they could get their hands on a developable quarterback, that would be great, but they'll probably have a short-term solution. Hey, maybe, Dwayne Haskins will be ready by next year. You know, he's been sitting there all season, and Haskins is a
intriguing prospect.
That's exactly the right words.
Did you see the stuff that came out about him? I don't know, 7 or 8 weeks ago. It was interesting that the fact that it came out, actually, I think it was an ESPN reporter that was on the sideline that picked it up rather than it was leaked. But the suggestion was that he was, because he's been the third stringer, of course, but he was suited up as the backup in one of the games, either because Rudolph was out or I don't think Ben's missed any, whatever. He was the go-to backup. It was a good opportunity at being set. And the suggestion was he was just going through the motions on the sideline, not his head wasn't really there. And the coaches, this reporter overheard the coaches emphasizing that and with consternation just saying, we're going in like 20 minutes. What the hell's going on? He just doesn't seem like he's there at all. It seems to be the perspective on Haskins. He's got all the talent, but he just doesn't have the right approach.
Yeah, I think that's been a good, that's why Washington let him go, basically. It's funny because, you know, he was a big success at Ohio State for Urban Meyer. It's a different thing, you know, a different dynamic and a different sort of football. The NFL doesn't give you that leeway that Meyer does. Remember, he let go of Joe Burrow to keep Haskins. And and we'll get to Joe Burrow, I'm sure, in a minute.
But one thing on Big Ben, Mike, where does he sit for you in terms of the modern NFL? All-time quarterbacks.
It's funny because I've written about him a couple of different times about the 2004 class, and he's clearly the best of those three.
That's Rivers and Eli.
Rivers and Eli. He has the best stat line, not by much over Rivers, but you know, by a good margin over Eli. He has two rings as Eli does, which is Eli's really Hall of Fame argument in three words. He has two rings. It's funny because I was looking at him kind of as with various throwers from the past, guys like John Hadle, and so I looked up on Pro Football Reference, they have a Hall of Fame monitor. And their algorithm takes into account lots of different things that it's based on Bill James, the Baseball Hall of Fame, the things that the voters look for, not necessarily who's got the best line, but who's got the things that the voters look for. Championship rings are a big thing. First team All Pros are a big thing. The counting stats are obviously a big thing, and they've all gotten bigger over the years. And so the two guys at the top of the list are Peyton Manning and Tom Brady, and they're virtually equal. they're like tenths of a point. And right behind them are Favre, surprisingly, and Rodgers. So nobody thinks Brett Favre is the third greatest quarterback of all time. But in terms of the way we see, or not we, but the Hall of Fame voters see, that's the way it works. Breeze sits seventh on that list. So he's going in automatically. The 11th guy on the list is Steve Young. Mm-hmm. Just above the average for the guys who are actually in the Hall of Fame. And the average for them is 104 points, however their system works. Two championships, two first-team All-Pros, seven Pro Bowls, 13 seasons. The next guy below that, the top guy below the average, is Matt Ryan. And Ben is one guy behind Matt Ryan. Matt Ryan's got 104 points, which is exactly the average. And Ben is 99.
Matt Ryan's going to the Hall of Fame.
Well, by their calculations, he's got a better shot than Ben, which I can't agree with. Ben's got the two rings. That's the big thing. Ben's never been a first-team All-Pro. Mm-hmm. He's only been to six Pro Bowls in 18 years. I think it's 17 seasons, basically. Rivers is right behind him, literally 1 point behind him. Mm-hmm. And Rivers has never been to a Pro Bowl, never won a championship, but has eight Pro Bowls. I'm sorry, never been first team All Super Bowl. Pro. Has eight Pro Bowls. Mm. And then behind them are guys who are in, like Bart Starr and Roger Staubach and Dan Fouts and Terry Bradshaw, which is pretty good competition. Yeah. Down to Kurt Warner, who's just ahead of Eli, and Ken Anderson. Neither of whom are in. And Kurt Warner's a great example of the modern thing because he's got pretty good counting stats. Mm-hmm. He was an MVP, which gives him a huge boost. But overall, it's a career of fits and starts.
Yeah.
He had the great years in St. Louis, followed by tough years elsewhere, followed by a couple of good years in Arizona. And, so it's hard to sort of put him in, but he's just ahead of Eli and Ken Anderson and way
down
Montana, the list.
Where's Montana on the list?
That's good. I didn't notice. He's somewhere in that top 20, I think.
Okay.
But, guys like Namath and Stabler and Sonny Jurgensen and Greasy and Moon, they're all way down there. They would have more trouble nowadays, strangely enough. And Russell Wilson's in the middle. Troy Aikman's way down there too. Now, Aikman was never a first team all pro, went to six Pro Bowls like Ben, but only in 12 years, not 18. But he has three championships, which vaults you along. So rings are the big thing. Rings are the thing.
Rings are the thing. What I think about, we've talked about it plenty of times, but just super quick on Eli, I get it. Of course, it's that number of the volume of rings, sure, as the surface level stat, but Eli's role, not just in the Super Bowls, but in those playoff runs in both championships for the Giants. And you compare that to Roethlisberger's first ring, right? And it's not even close. So I get that so much emphasis is placed on it, but we've got to look at the involvement of that player.
Remember, the first win for Roethlisberger, was not his.
Yeah, that's my point.
Yeah. Eli, you have to give a lot more credit to for simply making, obviously the David Tyree play is the big one. But again, that was a defensive, the defense won those two Super Bowls for the Giants, but Eli made the plays when he had to. Eli's an interesting case because he's basically almost exactly a league average quarterback.
Yeah.
Statistically with a 500 record as a starter. Mm. But of those three guys, Ben and Rivers and Eli, he's the only one whose statistics are better in the playoffs than they are in regular season.
Exactly. And that second championship, the playoff run, it's not just the big game. And it's a good point you make. Strahan and Osen and
Justin Tuck
was in there as well. JPP in the second one, right? But look at the run. Go back and look at the playoff run for the 2011 championship. And Eli's performances in that playoff when they did it the hard way again on the road. He was brilliant in that playoff run. So I think that has to count for a lot. Okay, that's fascinating then, Mike. Thanks for sharing that. And you said you wrote about it. So I guess it's on the Patreon.
Well, I haven't written about it now, but I've done in the past comparing those three guys. It's a fascinating – Rivers will be the one shut out. Mm. Although Rivers, to me, is a really good – the guy who he resembles the most is either Kurt Warner or Dan Fouts.
Right.
Both of whom are in. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, let's talk. Seeing as you were chucking around all pros and MVPs, I want to get into the offensive rookie of the year discussion because Ja'Marr Chase, after that incredible performance, and you referenced Burrow and the Bengals, I'm sure we'll get into where you think they are as they get into the playoffs. Ja'Marr Chase, to me, Mike, has to be the offensive rookie of the year. I know quarterbacks get extra status, extra chips. I think Mac Jones has had done everything pretty much he's been asked. But you know, you and I were talking about this on the show a few weeks back when the Patriots were going on this run, when everyone started taking them seriously. He wasn't, even to the standards they're expecting from him, he wasn't wildly consistent there. He had a couple of different games in that run as well. He's been fine, and respect to him, what he's done is, as you say, the strongest rookie campaign out of all of them. But Ja'Marr Chase is at a different level, isn't he?
Yet, well, things have changed in the past 3 weeks, basically, since we had that discussion. I think Jones was a lock at that point for offensive rookie of the year. You don't step in and do this as a rookie. Ben was maybe the last rookie to come in and do it, and they did it in much the same way by limiting what he was asked to do. Ben was only throwing about 20 passes a game on that first Steelers team that he played on. Then the Patriots had two bad losses in a row to the Colts and where they had to come from behind. And some of the team's limitations, as well as Max, were revealed. They don't have that deep threat that can, you know, the game-breaking kind of player. They're much better playing from the lead or against the Jacksonville Jaguars, which is pretty much the same thing. But in the last 2 weeks, Chase has had two huge games, and the second one was basically on the big stage, and that's what does it. It was a spectacular game. They looked like they looked at you at LSU playing against Clemson, you know, where he tore, it was A.J. Terrell, I think he caught five touchdowns over A.J. Terrell in that game and just made him look silly. It was
Terrell's
interesting.
A good corner, right? I mean, he's playing.
Terrell has, I mean, it took him a year to adjust from that, but he's had a very good season, and he was the recipient of a very bad call in the game last Sunday. Mm-hmm. But I think that the sheer spectacularness of that game this week, which vaulted him up over 1,000 yards. I mean, when he was sitting down there at 600 or 700, now he's had two huge games in a row. He's up over 1,000. Being 1,000 is the four-digit number that makes all the difference. Mm. I think you're probably right that he's probably going to be the offensive rookie of the year. It's hard for receivers to get MVP notice. I mean, there is some talk about Cooper Kupp, for example, being an MVP, which is fair enough because they probably couldn't be where they are without him having done what he did. But, you know, in NFL Europe, we had Marcus Robinson as MVP 1 year, which was justly deserved because he was doing an awful lot with a quarterback who, you know, wasn't throwing him into lots of yardage. Mm. But what Chase did was remarkable. And it was a remarkable game, too, because I still think that for all their inconsistencies, what killed the Chiefs in that game were three DPI calls. The horrible call for the horse collar, which wasn't a horse collar and wasn't a hit out of bounds. And then there was the one other one was the hands to the face, off the ball, hands to the face. You know, again, one that you can call, but why were you calling it, you know, at this point in the game? So, I mean, taking those away, I think it's a much different game. But that's not to take any credit away from Joe Burrow and Ja'Marr Chase, because, you know, you were there and they did what they had to do. And Burrow's thrown now for, 1,000 yards in the last, basically in the last two games.
Two games, yeah, right.
And so, yeah, I agree. I think Chase probably is the offensive rookie of the year, which means that what's his name from Creed Humphrey from Kansas City is not going to get it.
Creed Humphrey, even though he's going to have his work cut out because Lucas Niang has torn his patella tendon. So he's done for the season. So how big a hit is that going to be? The Chiefs offensive line,
the Chiefs offensive line had just pretty much gelled, as it were. They were playing pretty well together. They actually dominated for quite a while in that game. You know, the Chiefs were running the ball almost at will against the Bengals, and Joe Mixon wasn't. And I think that hurt the Chiefs a lot in that game. I think it sort of took part of that game plan out away because they just, you know, they just weren't able to run with the same efficiency after Niang went down.
Okay. So Chiefs banged up on the line. Joe Burrow's injury, incidentally, because that was a worry, I think, for Bengals fans. That it's a knee injury, but they're not concerned about it. They think he's going to be fine. The Titans winning again and getting right in the mix, despite not at all being a fashionable pick, and they could have Derrick Henry back as well. The Patriots stuttering now. So the AFC playoff picture, who do you think is rolling into the playoffs, Mike, as the most dangerous proposition? Is it still the Chiefs? Can we overreact too much? Are people overreacting too much to that Bengals win? Are the Bengals the biggest threat to the Chiefs? How are you looking at this AFC playoff?
That's a really interesting one, because recency bias obviously says you have to give the Bengals a whole lot of credit for what they can do. Tennessee, to me, is the most interesting team. I don't know about Henry being back, but, you know.
You're not convinced he will come back, you mean?
I mean, who knows? Or in what condition? Shape. But they've been really efficient in terms of winning games. I saw they're 6-2 against teams with winning records, which is pretty impressive. Yeah. And producer Ollie has told me that Mike Vrabel is his choice for coach of the year.
Yeah.
which is not a bad choice. I think he's been in my mix though. Anytime we've talked about it,
Mike Vrabel's my choice for coach of the year. I think that's what producer Ollie was conveying to you. So we wouldn't get into coach of the year.
He's pulling the strings. You're just a puppet.
Hey, situation normal then. But yeah, so I think he is. I mean, I want to get your perspective on coach of the year. I think LaFleur's got to be in that conversation. He don't get enough respect. But
it's Vrabel, funny, yeah. If the season ended today, the Packers would be 13-3 for the third straight year under Matt LaFleur, and he gets zero credit.
LaFleur has got, in his first three seasons as head coach, 39-9 is his record. That is more than any other coach in NFL history.
Yeah, 13-3, three straight years. They should take the extra game off the schedule now, just so it doesn't, you know, now it's going to mess up the symmetry of that.
So the problem is
you can't separate him from Rodgers, you know, because everybody says, as I do, that the Packers will win or lose based on what Aaron Rodgers does. And, you know, God, he was amazing last week. There was a great close up of his head just before a play. And he kind of looks over it, then he looks to the side and he goes like this, because one of his backs is lined up in the place he doesn't want him. So it's like just this little head in the back goes to the other side.
And no language, no dialogue.
Now we can go, you know, and he's just so calm and cool there. But I think Vrabel's got to be a leading contender, and LaFleur will be as well. But
who else is on your list?
That, I don't think he gets there because of that reason. Frank Reich, although Indianapolis goes in and out, I thought they should have won that game against Vegas. I thought they were hard, but done by as well. Of course, Wentz hadn't practiced all week.
And he needs
a lot of practice. You get the sense that Reich is kind of, you know, talk about puppet, but Reich is, you know, very careful bringing him along and with what he asks him to do. Belichick doesn't get a lot of credit, but I think he's got the best out of this team. Now, Belichick, the GM, can be faulted maybe for the way he put together some of the parts of this team. And they've obviously got limitations. But if they can get out in front, they're a very dangerous team to be playing. They lost to Buffalo and Indy primarily because Buffalo and Indy got out in front and then could hold the Patriots' attack in check, because they're not built really to come from behind.
It's interesting what you say about Belichick, the GM, though, because he's had a strong, I know maybe in the last few years less so, but this offseason, free agency in the draft, I think he's pretty much hit with everything.
Well, it's one of those things where you sort of gambled on Aguilar, who hasn't been what he was in Vegas last year. And part of that's because they have a rookie quarterback, and so they're not taking their shots. Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry, Smith hasn't been the receiving threat that they probably wanted him to be, which is not to knock his play, because they're a run first team and he's done a great job run blocking. You know, and they spent a lot of money all around, you know, and Judon, of course, has been a perfect player for them. It's simply that they're lacking that one explosive piece. who wasn't available. I think at a reasonable price, even though they overpaid virtually everybody that they signed in order to get them. Mm. But the other people, you know, I'm not a big John Harbaugh fan personally. But John Harbaugh has coached his butt off keeping this team in contention, basically, given all of the injuries that they've had.
Do you think they've been the unluckiest in that respect? They've
probably been hardest. Yeah. I think that's for sure. I think Buffalo, maybe Cleveland, you know, it's odd that there are two teams in the same division have had, you know, the most crippling set of injuries and losses.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you watch Harbaugh with Josh Johnson at quarterback, who played for him at University of San Diego, and has hung around pro football playing anywhere, you know, whatever league pops up, Josh Johnson's there. And it's like, you know, but you look at teams that don't have bat, Mike Glennon, for example, you know, for the Giants. I mean, it's pathetic, you know, and you just say, well, and here's Baltimore playing with Josh Johnson and not embarrassing themselves.
Yeah,
you know?
Yeah, yeah.
Huntley has made himself some money if they don't re-sign him, you know, behind Lamar. So, yeah, I think he should get some notes. And maybe Nick Sirianni, I mean, he's not going to win it, obviously, but Sirianni's took a lot of time at the start of the season in a new job and then settled down with what would work for the team. And it's kind of a very un-Eagles kind of team. But he said, okay, Jalen Hurts is our quarterback. Okay, so what can we do to put us in a position where Jalen Hurts can help us win because our strengths are up front, you know, offensively and defensively. And that's kind of worked out pretty well for them. This, you know, I mean, everybody in Philadelphia is, you know, throwing cheesesteaks in the air because they think the Eagles are on the march to the Super Bowl.
You never know. Stranger things happen. Is Jalen Hurts the starter in Philly week one next season?
That's a great question. Cause I don't know. Probably. Yes. Did Gardner Minshew sign a 1-year deal with them? I mean, Minshew should get another look somewhere. Sure. But we all know what his sort of strengths and limitations are. He could be the Fitz of his generation.
Minshew.
Ryan Fitzpatrick of his generation. But yeah, I think Hurts goes in number one. I don't think they draft a quarterback. And if Minshew goes, they probably bring in another guy who can come in for Hurts. Partly too, because when you've got a quarterback who's basically a runner and running is going to be part of your game plan, you really need to have a backup because injuries are inevitable.
Just on that tip for a moment, I'm going to go to the mailbag for the first time today. Cormac McNulty. Hey, Cormac. Are Kirk Cousins' days numbered in Minnesota? Ari, his COVID stance potentially costing them a playoff berth.
That's interesting. Because Wentz, Cousins, Rodgers, I mean, what is it with quarterbacks?
Right.
And from in the North for COVID.
Specifically
things.
In the North.
And you know, this is something that hurts the team as well. Like you're not vaccinated. So therefore, you know, until the NFL cut it from 10 days to 5, coincidentally enough. You were guaranteed to lose at least one game. If you did,
That's a fascinating point, Mike, because I was reflecting on when the Cousins news broke. And as you say, it was around the time Wentz, this was obviously the same week and the Wentz story broke and then Wentz was able to get going. But we saw how the whole situation impacted his play and ultimately the Colts' performance. Cousins more dramatically. So I think Aaron Rodgers is one of the biggest beneficiaries of this because I know it's a slightly different situation and Rodgers was disingenuous and ambiguous in a lot of how he went about it. But I think that's helped. The one risk for Rodgers as MVP or the one challenge to that was that whole situation. And would the voters have a concern with how Rodgers played that situation? Cousins and Wentz being identified as quarterbacks that haven't been vaccinated either, I think that's helped. That's definitely helped Rodgers' case. In Cousins' case in particular, if you're Dalvin Cook, and I know it was a long shot for the Vikings to make the playoffs, but if you're Dalvin Cook or any of his teammates, frankly, and your teammates put you in your team in that situation, it is altogether different. I've heard a lot of, well, a number of people supporting, well, it's their right. And if you're anti-vax, that's your right. And they're athletes and they don't know what the long-term impact's going to be for, you know, their professional career. But you've got a responsibility to your teammates, don't you? It's a different situation.
That's, yeah, let's go back to Antonio Brown.
Right.
Basically, but it doesn't seem to play out that way. Maybe because other players think, individual liberties are, are more in that. But, they had no chance to beat Green Bay with Sean Mannion at quarterback. Zero. And you could see the frustration in Mike Zimmer afterwards when, someone asked him about Kellen Mond, if Mond would play next week. And he said, no. He said, why? I don't want to see him out on the field. Mm. I mean, they drafted this guy in the third round. I mean, it's like, and it's interesting, too, because I don't think there's been a lot of discussion about Mike Zimmer as a possible departure as head coach. I think he and Vic Fangio, two very great defensive minds, are actually probably walking a sort of tightrope right now in terms of what happens. And Zimmer's kind of had demi meltdown after the game didn't do any good. And I think that revolves around Kirk Cousins, because I'm really curious in the end to see what the dynamic was between Zimmer and Cousins, whether he wanted Cousins and they gave him the big contract because he thought that's what they needed. Now, remember, they played the whole year, most of the year without Adam Thielen, which hurt them a lot.
And they've had this situation with Griffin as well. And, they'd be banged up defensively.
But I wonder if they might want to move on.
And this gives them the option to do that.
They would have to look at who the new coach is and what he thinks about Cousins. But, obviously Cousins is making a lot of money, and that's another factor. But who are you going to replace him with is another one, which is what, people, the discussion all season has been, do the Browns try to re-sign Baker Mayfield, having basically not extended his contract and so he can please playing it out this year. Baker has basically proved them right by not offering him an extension beforehand, because right now, I don't know what his market value is, but it's certainly not in the top quarterback. And we saw that last night in this game. Yeah. Pittsburgh tore him apart. The score of the game doesn't reflect the, Pittsburgh basically just sacked Baker Mayfield and kicked field goals and the penalty to Clowney. You get 15 yards in the NFL. You get 15 yards for taking the guy's shoe that's half up his foot and then just throwing it. It's like, I laugh, but I guess, that's what Clownies are for.
Baker, that really interesting, because is he going to have to suck it up if he does get moved on? Given the market value, I can't see many teams stepping up to that kind of contract.
So if I were Baker and I can't read Kevin Stefanski's mind, but I would, I would sit down Kevin Stefanski, and if he wants to go ahead with him at quarterback, I would do a team friendly deal. He doesn't need the money because he's doing more commercials than any player in the NFL. But by team friendly, we're talking in the 20 million plus area, the average quarterback kind of deal, as opposed to the star quarter, because face it, Baker, you're an average quarterback. And now on this team, if this Browns team had stayed healthy, we all thought that an average quarterback like Baker, or slightly better than average, would be able to take them somewhere. But obviously, with the way that the season played out, he couldn't. And that would be, to me, the ideal thing. I wouldn't want to go into some tricky territory necessarily. There's a lot of teams that will need quarterbacks, though. The most interesting of which is the Green Bay Packers, if Rodgers does go through with last year's, he's a free agent at the end of the season with that deal they did last year.
So. Well, this is it. Let me throw this question at you from Damon at the NC Show, is how you get in touch with us. If Green Bay wins it all, Mike, does Rodgers retire? really interesting. Yeah.
Saying I can't read Kevin Stefanski's mind.
You definitely can't read Rogers' mind.
I can't find Aaron Rodgers' mind. You know, who knows what's going on there? You know, he's probably, if he wins again. Do you remember years ago when we used to talk about the best quarterbacks and all? And I would keep saying if I were building a team, I'd build it around Aaron Rodgers. Mm-hmm. He's, you know, and he's probably the best passer of that, of his generation, you know. And I keep saying he was Patrick Mahomes before Patrick Mahomes was Patrick Mahomes. And God, will they stop saying about no-look passes? They went on about a no-look pass in that game where he looked at the guy. He's looking left, and then he turns right and looks at the guy, and then he throws the ball. Yeah, yeah. It's not a no-look pass.
When
you
he releases
if
the
you
ball,
look, it isn't no-look.
At any point.
But Rodgers could retire. I mean, he wouldn't have much else to prove. Would he really want to take a team that's not? You know, I guess the argument would be if he is the Green Bay team, in other words, if the supporting cast is not automatically a Super Bowl team without him, which they probably aren't, would he want to go into another situation simply to prove that he can take anybody to the Super Bowl?
Right. Right.
You know, and he's just ornery enough to probably want to do that.
I think I could see that, but equally I could see him and in mindful of watching Roethlisberger last night, and particularly the post game interview, and it was emotional. He was welling up, and the Steelers fans, obviously, it was a big night for them. But as you've already identified on the show, Mike, this is a pale imitation of Roethlisberger in his prime, right? And we see it time and time again in many sports. And you go a little bit too long, a couple of rounds too many, a couple of fights too many. Rodgers strikes me as exactly the kind of player that will want to go out in his prime, vintage, drop the mic, see you later, and probably join Pat McAfee in WWE. I think that is a distinct possibility. Yeah,
I hadn't even thought. I'm sorry you reminded me of that. Because watching Pat McAfee is really irritating. And now we're going to go to Aaron Rodgers now. And Aaron Rodgers is right. Whatever he's going to say, he's right. I don't know what you say. How can you people say this stuff? I mean, I love listening to that for an hour and a half. So it calms me down. It makes, you know, I see the world in a better perspective. I understand football a whole lot better because of that.
You don't need to meditate.
I'd rather have Michael Irvin slapping my knee for an hour and a half.
Oh my God. I think I've still got bruises from that, Mike. Years later. I've got a good one for you.
But yeah, I mean, my career aim, if I'm Aaron Rodgers, is something slightly more media, slightly higher up on the media pyramid than Pat McAfee's show.
Yeah.
You know, he was being talked about as the host of Jeopardy. You know.
I don't know. I think McAfee's got a bigger pool these days. Right. Here's one for you. Head coach, we're talking about hot seats, and obviously there are opportunities with the Raiders and the Jags. We know we expect that Matt Nagy will be gone from the Bears. That, I think, is a reasonable assumption. Well, just humor me for a moment, and we'll roll with that. So those three head coaching ops, the Raiders,
it's
Jags,
it's funny. I have this sense that the Bears might do enough in the last 2 weeks to save Nagy's job.
Seems good, you think?
Well, the thing is, they're going to have to fire Pace as well. You know, but you know, I don't know. I think he should. You know, I think the jury's out on Nagy. You know, they've come back with the verdict, and it's that he should go. But I'm just wondering about that, because once they seem to have settled down now into this thing, now beating the Giants shouldn't save anybody's job, because Joe Judge should be in that category as well. You know, the Giants are horrible.
I mean, that bizarre presser he gave afterwards, they'd come out of
that was like that was like 10 times worse than Mike Zimmer's.
It was, and that's saying something. It was very desperate. And the organization had come out, a week ago and say, whatever it was, say, he's our guy and Danny Dimes is our guy. Do you think they might be thinking, after that?
It's funny. It's funny because if Daniel Jones is their guy, and the best thing that's happened to him is not playing the last 6 weeks, because he can't get, but if he's their guy, you would think they would want to bring in someone who might do a better job with their guy. And the argument for Joe Judge was one of character, you know, of building a team culture, which they don't seem to have been able to do now. And they haven't done for 10 years. I mean, well, when, yeah, 10 years yeah. since 11, basically. I mean, yeah. there were a couple of years where they still struggled along for, and I think Eli was a good part of that in terms of team culture, you know, a good yeah. example sort of up front, but they couldn't make a decision on Eli. They couldn't make a decision on coach. They had three coaches with 2 years each, you know, mm-hmm. and if they fired Judge, it would be another one. Yeah. But they're not winning. I mean, it's 4-win year after 4-win year. And mm-hmm. how can you keep on excusing that? You know, it, and Judge has been no better. They're 4-11 this year. So, mm-hmm. Well, they're 4-12 now. So they'll finish, you know, maybe they'll finish 5-12, big deal. Judge reminds me of the Black Knight and Monty Python, you know, kind of, I used that for Dan Campbell at the start of the season.
Yeah, you did. I was Judge, thinking well, I heard that.
Judges in that kind of category as well. You know, it's like, it's just a flesh wound. We're still fighting.
yeah.
And, but he's supposedly safe and Gettleman's going to get fired. And one of Gettleman's assistants is going to take over. So I don't see much change, much change happening there. I think the Jacksonville job, it's all Trevor Lawrence, but that's a complete makeover. You know, that's something where you're coming in and you're going to have to rebuild the team from the bottom, basically, kind of like the Jets last year.
Yes.
Where I think Saleh, you know, after last week where they played Tampa so tough, you know, yeah. people are realizing that Saleh's maybe, you know, maybe is on the right sort of track, but it's the second year that will tell more than the first.
Mike, what did you think of Salah's call?
Smart enough to put the ball into Braxton Berrios's hands.
Yeah, God,
there's no stopping Braxton Berrios.
Belichick shaking his head, thinking, "What the hell? How is this happening?" What did you think of Salah's decision to go for it, and not take the field goal, to go for it on fourth down, and try and put the game to bed? You got to, right? I mean, in that situation with very little, nothing really going on in the season, of course, and you've got this opportunity to ice the champs. I think you've just got to do it. What do you, you know, as you said a moment ago, what's the difference between a 4-13 record and a 3-14 record? I
mean, no, true. And, but you coaching decisions, just like the one the week before, when you have Brady or Aaron Rodgers on the other side, you're thinking 45 seconds is enough, a minute is enough time for them to get a field goal.
Yes.
By any, you know, easily, you know, those guys are going to kill it. And we don't want to lose to a last minute field goal. So make them score a touchdown to beat you because the odds are against that. And I didn't really argue with that. I could see the logic of that. And I was actually really surprised that Brady could take them down for a touchdown because everything said they couldn't. Antonio Brown had walked off the field. You know, who's he going to throw to deep? You know, Cyril?
Yeah,
Cyril who?
Turns out you know? More catches in that game, I think he had in his entire career. Hey, listen,
yeah, I mean, he's bounced around from practice squad to practice squad.
Best thing Matt Nagy has done this season, arguably, and Bears fans, well, I don't think many would argue with this, it calling a timeout to honor Robert Quinn. I mean, that was a classy move, I thought, when Quinn broke Dent's sack record, which, let's put that in context, Mike, because Dent was, and I don't remember him first time around, but of course, I know all about that Bears defense that he was a cornerstone of. For the benefit of listeners in a similar position, talk us through what a hell of a player he was and therefore how big an achievement this is.
Richard Dent was on a great defensive line. I guess the best comparison that people might take to Richard Dent would be Michael Strahan. But he was bigger than Strahan. He was better against the run. Not that Strahan was bad against the run. Remember, Strahan always played on the left side of the defensive line. The offense is right, which is the side that teams traditionally run more too. So you had to be good against the run. Dent was a big part of a great defensive line, a great defensive team, those Buddy Ryan defenses, the 4-6 defense on those Bears teams. And they dominated people up front from the end. Dan Hampton and Dent did most of the dominating, and they had the Fridge and Steve McMichael, you know, in the middle there, and Singletary behind them, you know, and a really tough secondary.
Singletary, what a beast he was.
So, yeah, I mean, but that was an accomplishment. And it's the thing with Nagy that doing that was not just the recognition of Quinn, because, you know, in the longer season and in the pass oriented game, there's more sacks and there's more opportunities for sacks. And, you know, this year you can argue that injuries and COVID have made it easier for some guys to get sacks, blah, blah, blah. But Chicago traditionally is a defensive team. The, you know, they have won the few championships they've won since the glory days based on defense. Mm-hmm. You know, they, the monsters of the Midway, they honor tough players up front. They understand mm-hmm. that. And so I think that was the real glory of what Nagy did. It showed a kind of understanding of how Chicago football mm-hmm. and Chicago football fans think and look at the game. And mm-hmm. so I really liked it as well.
Yeah, really interesting. Mike, we're out of time.
I want to just put in a word for Andre Roberts, because if everybody says special teams are one third of the game, why do teams keep cutting Andre Roberts, who have, for years has been, if not, you know, not year in, year out, the best kickoff returner in the league, but certainly always one of the couple of best and always worth at least one touchdown a season or not. And, you know, watching him get another touchdown.
And not that expensive, you'd imagine, game. Right? I mean, he can't get it. Yeah, all right.
No, I mean, but teams in the end say, well, we can use somebody else to return kickoffs. And in fairness, the NFL is, you know, devalued the kickoff and because you can't block on it, you know, and the team can't, right? It's become a less important part of the game in that sense. So yeah, I get that, but I really, the other one I just want to go to quickly is that matchup with Dallas and Arizona, which was a kind of disappointing game in some ways, but Isaiah Simmons and Micah Parsons, you know, on the two different sides. Parsons is more of a first two levels player, and Simmons is more of a second two levels player, linebacker, and they use him a lot the way you would use a safety, you know, covering slot receivers and that kind of stuff, which Parsons can do as well. But Parsons is more like moving between defensive end and outside linebacker and inside linebacker. And Simmons is, but that's the new NFL. Is guys like this on defense who can do what used to be considered multiple positions, you know, and you can use them in so many ways, and it makes an offense's life that much harder. Simmons is kind of like Tyrann Mathieu was, you know, in the sense of absorbing multiple positions. I don't think they'll play him at core at safety or something like that, like Mathieu could, but you know, I just loved watching those two guys play after play, and Simmons made the play of that game, which was he blitzed up the middle, and Zeke Elliott did a nice job getting in front of him and blocking him, but he got past Elliott, at which point Dak went through the hole up the middle that was there, and he got up and chased Dak down and forced the fumble, you know, punched the ball out. And that was the key play of the game in my mind, that and the fake non-field goal that got Dallas to call a timeout. So they didn't have any timeouts.
They didn't have any left yet.
They couldn't challenge the fumble, which was the worst call of the weekend. Jadeveon Clowney's and the shoe throw, not accepted. You know, it was a fumble. Yes, it needed to be reviewed probably to see that it was a fumble. But because it wasn't a turnover, they couldn't review it. It wasn't the last 2 minutes. They couldn't review it. And they didn't have any challenges. They couldn't review it. So, you know, Dallas, that was a tough break for them. But makes it a little more interesting going into the last week of the season.
It really does. And speaking of which, we're going to be getting into the final week of the season later on this week on the pod. Ollie Connolly joining us. The aforementioned Ollie, the producer, back for Edge Rush as well. We're going to get a college, can try and stick a college days in as well, of course, with Ben Isaac. So we've got a jam-packed schedule for you this week. What are you writing about?
Well, I wrote last week about John Madden. I know you talked about him already. So I didn't go on about it on the show, but you can go to the Patreon column. And I wrote the whole column was on John Madden last week. This week, we'll see. I'll try to catch up. I think I've actually got a mailbag that I want to answer in the column. And that's patreon.com/MikeCarlsonFMTE.
Got it right first time, Mike. It is it. New year, new Mike.
Yeah, I knew that name was familiar somehow. My new Secret Service name is Dust on the Crust. That may be the title of my autobiography.
What do you say? I think it should be. Or your difficult second album. I think it should be after Mike Sings Christmas. What is your hotel pseudonym? You want to go
and Neil Reynolds.
Brilliant stuff, Mike. Listen, you're back next week.
I just wake up and talk.
Well, hey, remember, I'm just a puppet, right? I'll see what the boss reckons.
That's true.
Lovely stuff from Iron Mike. He is back, same time, same place, next week. As I mentioned at the tail end there, we are going to be back with Ollie Connolly later on this week, looking ahead to week 18. Propo, an edge rush, might even sneak in a College Days as well. All of those can be found if you subscribe to us. That is, drop into your podcatcher of choice. We're on social at the NC Show. We'll put out videos from the episodes over there. Plenty of other extra content that goes out too. Big shout out to all of you who've taken time to review us, leave a review on whichever platform you listen to us on. We really appreciate that. It helps us with sponsors, helps us spread the word. And we are rolling this out for you each and every week through the season, through the off season as well. Don't worry, we're not going to be going anywhere. And so all of this helps us in the grand scheme of things. So we massively appreciate that. Hope 2022 is treating you okay so far. We'll see you later on in the week. Bye. Podcast Network.